Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'm Tom Lyons. In today's show, we talk to the State Command Sergeant Major, Scott Mills, about the Minnesota National Guard in 2010. Megan Reif joins us to talk about Yellow Ribbon Employment Coach Program. And finally, we take a look at Minnesota in the Spanish-American War with Leland Smith. All this and more on today's Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Check our podcasts of today's show and all our shows on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's get started. This week, Command Sergeant Major Scott Mills joins us. He is the State Command Sergeant Major of the Minnesota National Guard. Sergeant Major Mills, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here and wonderful to be on the phone with you, Tom.
Sergeant Major, we've all heard in the press that you've had a series of deployments. Can you tell us a little bit about the deployments in 2010?
Well, I can tell you that we are facing yet another round of significant deployments for our organizations. We're looking at the 1st Brigade Combat Team deploying once again. For those of you that might not be aware, that's the longest-serving organization during this wartime period, and they're getting ready to ramp up to head over to Iraq again next year.
I understand they've been alerted to that, and they're already training for that upcoming deployment?
They absolutely have. They've been very heavily in the training process for almost a year now. And then we also have some folks from the 133rd Air Wing and the 148th Air Wing out of Minneapolis and Duluth, respectfully, getting ready to deploy as well.
Sergeant Major, I understand from previous interviews that you're doing more and more of your training up at Camp Ripley. Is that true?
We are. We're absolutely trying to do as much training as we can at Camp Ripley for several reasons. One, it's been enhanced so that it allows us to do that. And two, it keeps our soldiers and airmen in the Minnesota area and closer to their families as they prepare for these deployments.
Sounds like it's one of the finest facilities in the United States.
Absolutely one of the very best National Guard organization or facilities in the United States, and right there with any of the federal facilities out there.
Well, it's just a wonderful state asset. Sergeant Major, you had some units return home this year. Can you tell us about those?
We did. We had several units return this year. We had the 34th Infantry Division, which served in Basra, Iraq for a 12-month period, return in the February-March time period. And we had the 133rd Air Wing, the 148th Air Wing, who returned several of their airmen over the course of the last year. We had the 114th Trans and the 151 Field Artillery, and then our 204th Medical Command units returned during the course of this year.
Sounds like quite a few troops. You know, collectively, how many that was?
Collectively, that was about 3,000 to 3,500.
Well, that's terrific to get all those folks home again.
I'll tell you, it is a load off of our minds when we get them home.
Now, we interviewed some people from St. Cloud. You had a unit deployed just recently up there, didn't you?
Yes, we have. We have our Bravo Company of the 211th, who is a Chinook helicopter organization that is down at Fort Hood right now preparing for deployment.
Sergeant Major, you recently had a kind of a major change in command.
Yes, we did. We had Major General Rick Nash become our 30th Adjutant General. He is the general who led the 34th ID during their deployment in Basra. And he replaced Major General Larry Shelito, who had served as a 29th Adjutant General for the past 7 years.
We're speaking with State Command Sergeant Major Scott Mills from the Minnesota National Guard on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Sergeant Major, what other changes occurred, and were there any other opportunities provided?
Well, we had some significant changes through the course of the year. The First Lady's Military Family Care Initiative was transitioned over to our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon network and is now being managed by our military family care folks. We have a series of veteran small business seminars that we're conducting throughout the state of Minnesota. Obviously, we've joined with KTalk, and we're doing the Minnesota Military Radio Hours, which we appreciate very much. And two other significant things were the 148th received the Block 50 F-16 aircraft, which provides a more powerful engine and an enhanced radar capability for our fighter pilots. And we had some very significant improvements to Camp Ripley that helped make it be one of the premier training facilities in the nation.
I had an opportunity to tour that cinder block town that was being built up there. That's got to help a lot with your training.
Our CACTAF is something that really helps prepare our soldiers and airmen for training in the combat zones. And we're very proud of what we've been able to accomplish up at Camp Ripley.
And you mentioned the F-16s in Duluth. That pretty much extends their duty for quite some time, doesn't it?
Well, that's what we're hoping for, but that's what we believe as well.
It's a significant upgrade in the capabilities, I understand.
Absolutely.
Sergeant Major, they tell me that you had some input in developing a way to fold the Minnesota state flag.
I did. It's funny that you mentioned that. I had been taking several phone calls from folks, government agencies, local veterans groups, on how is the Minnesota flag supposed to be folded. And after some extensive research, we found out that there really was no designated way of folding the state flag. While other states do have ways to fold them, we found out we didn't. So we came up with what we thought was the best representation of the flag, and had a young OCS candidate by the name of Davin Fisher put the folds into place, and we were able to present it in an omnibus bill, which was eventually adopted and passed this last year.
Sergeant Major, can you briefly tell us, as the Command Sergeant Major for the Minnesota National Guard, what kind of responsibilities do you have in that position?
Well, I am the Adjutant General's Senior Enlisted Advisor on all policies regarding the enlisted force, and that's approximately 14,000 soldiers and airmen.
And in that capacity, what kind of challenges do you foresee for 2011?
Well, I would tell you our biggest challenges are going to be the fiscal challenges that we'll face, you know, with the proposed cuts in the defense budget and the current deficit here in Minnesota. Our biggest challenges are going to be the fiscal challenges.
And for next year, we've talked about being alerted for the 34th Infantry to deploy to Iraq. Are there any other things upcoming?
Well, we do have a couple ongoing. We talked about the Bravo to the 11th, and we also have an operational mentoring liaison team of about 13 soldiers who will be departing, and we do have an agricultural mission that we've just been tasked with, so that would be approximately an additional 70. So we're looking at a fairly large number of deployed forces next year.
You're going to have another busy year, Sergeant Major.
Another busy year. We sure are.
Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for your support of our soldiers, airmen, and their families. We greatly appreciate what you do for us.
My pleasure, sir. That was the State Command Sergeant Major Scott Mills of the Minnesota National Guard. We have links to more information on Facebook and at the MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Want to know what's on the mind of Minnesota's Adjutant General? Generally Speaking is next on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Hi, I'm Private Abigail. Abigail Benson, stationed at Kandahar Airfield, Afghanistan. I'd like to wish a happy holidays to my husband and my family back home in St. Paul, Minnesota. I miss you and I love you.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Recently, the Department of Defense has announced that they are ready to make the actions to ensure a smooth transition for our military services. The Minnesota National Guard will follow the guidance of the Department of Defense and the National Guard Bureau. The legislation repeals Don't Ask, Don't Tell only after the President, the Secretary of Defense, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs all certify that the Department of Defense is ready to make this change without hurting unit cohesion, military readiness and effectiveness, as well as recruiting and retention. Successful implementation of repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell will depend upon strong leadership, a clear message, and proactive education. We are confident in our capabilities in all three areas. As we prepare for certification, the department will revise applicable policies and develop and provide education and training to ensure repeal is implemented thoughtfully and without disruption to the force. Until certification occurs, the law commonly known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell remains in effect, and the Department of Defense and the Minnesota National Guard will continue to apply the law as it is obligated to do. It remains a policy of the Department of Defense and the Minnesota National Guard not to ask service members or applicants about their sexual orientation, to treat all members with dignity and respect, and to ensure maintenance of good order and discipline. We will equip commanders in the field with the education and training tools to educate the force on what is expected in a post-repeal environment. Service members are expected to treat everyone, regardless of their sexual orientation, with dignity and respect. Leadership is key to making this a smooth transition, and I will ensure the Minnesota Guard leaders are prepared for this transition. The Minnesota National Guard's culture of professionalism, respect, and discipline will not change, and we will contribute to a successful implementation.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. As Minnesota's 34th Red Bull Infantry Division prepared to return home from Iraq last February, an in-country survey revealed that one-third of the troops were concerned about their employment when returning back home. Here this week to talk about that is Megan Reif. She is the Employer and Outreach Liaison with Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Ms. Reif, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well today. Megan, when the 34th Infantry Division came home last February, many of the soldiers were concerned about their jobs. Can you tell us why?
We did an informal survey of the 34th Infantry Division before and then during their deployment. And with that survey came about one-third of them were concerned about their employment. And that means anything from they were laid off right before they left for deployment, they were looking for a career change, or just with the economy, they had lost their positions.
And do you regularly do the monitoring of these type of situations?
At the start of this, I was employed just to take care of the 34th Infantry Division soldiers, which was 1,100 that deployed last February. So we just focused on that group at that time, and now it's focused on any service member in the state of Minnesota.
And what are you doing to help them when they return home?
We have a program called the Employment Coach Program, started in February, obviously, of 2009, and helps out service members with their skills, meaning anything from job search to resume writing, motivation, confidence building, networking, any of those tools.
So do you start working with them as they come back and go through their reintegration training, or when do you start with them?
Absolutely, yes. At their initial reintegration, we have forms that they can fill out if they're interested in receiving a employment coach, somebody to work with them one-on-one to help with those skills. And then at the 30 and 60-day events that they go to, there are people there to teach classes as well on networking and building a better resume.
Megan, if almost a third of them were concerned about employment issues, that's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. But again, it is some of them, you know, may have left for deployment with knowing that they didn't have a job prior. So it's anything from, you know, transitioning to a new job to starting their first job after they got back to deployment, after their deployment, or even, you know, thinking about heading back to school.
Now, are you providing mentors for some of these troops?
Absolutely. Yes, we with the Yellow Ribbon Employment Coach Program, they are mentors. And what they do is they're human resources or networking professionals that volunteer. We have them from business professionals from all different larger corporations in the state of Minnesota, all the way to some smaller businesses who have some HR professionals, and that's what they do for a living. They volunteer their time to work one-on-one with these service members and their families, helping them with any of these skills that they need.
So are you actively recruiting mentors for the program?
Absolutely. Anybody can go to www.beyondtheyellowribbon.org and sign up to be a mentor.
And are you still, you've had a lot of folks back for a while, are you still looking for new mentors?
Absolutely. We're always looking for new mentors.
So if someone in the audience is listening who wants to mentor a returning soldier to help them find employment and so forth, they go to beyondtheyellowribbon.org and they can sign up?
Correct.
Now, the other side of the deal, the service members that came back and need coaching or need some help, where do they go? What do they do?
Same thing, www.beyondtheyellowribbon.org, and again, they can sign up to receive a mentor. What I do then is I get an email, and I match up those individuals with the correct professional to help them out. If they're in IT, I try to set them up with somebody who is also in IT or human resources or sales.
Do you have a lot of mentors now?
We do. We have over 100 now at this point.
And how many would you like to have?
As many as possible.
All right. We're speaking with Megan Reif, Employer and Outreach Liaison with the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Megan, it just started, as you said, in February of 2009, but we're coming up on 2011. How's the program working?
Program is working great. We've helped over 130 service members and spouses. There are a few spouses that have been helped as well. And some of them are still in the process of getting mentored with their mentees are also, they're in the process of their mentorship. We have had a few really great success stories of job placement, and then some, you know, have fallen off the track and have either decided to not get employment at this time or to, you know, go back to school full time.
Can you share a couple of success stories with us?
Absolutely. The first one I'd like to share is of a soldier who actually was not employed before he left for deployment. He's 19 years old, and he went off to deployment, came home, and really needed to find a job. And with his mentorship that he had from this individual, they were working on, okay, what steps do I need to take in order to fulfill a career, not just a job? So right now he's working at a military surplus store part-time, and then he is also going back to school full-time, which is wonderful, and he hopes to become a police officer in the near future.
That sounds great. Do you have another story for us?
Yes, I do, and this one's a little bit different. This is somebody who already had a college degree, had been working full-time before he left, was going through some career changes, came back and was unemployed, went back to kind of what he would call a dead-end job, and received a mentor through this program. By working with the mentor, this is a brand-new story, he just got placed. It took about 6 months, but he just got placed as a financial analyst position for Cummins. So, yeah, wonderful stories.
That's terrific. Now, we're sending anyone that wants to be mentors to beyondtheyellowribbon.org. And the service members know how to contact you if they need some help. If there's employers out there that are listening that are interested in hiring a returning soldier, are we sending them to the same website? How do they do that?
Absolutely. www.beyondtheyellowribbon.org. You can sign up to be a mentor, or you can sign up to receive a mentor. You can also find my information on the website if you'd like to just contact me about any jobs that you have to offer to our returning service members.
Okay, and then your title says that you're an employment coach. So do you actually help them write resumes and practice their interviewing skills?
I do help them do those things. I believe I have a great group of professionals that do it better than I do, so I try to use them as much as I can with the mentor program, but yes, I do it as well.
So you're helping them with resumes, interviewing, networking skills, any way you can help them so that they are more employable?
Correct.
Is there anything else that the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is doing for service members?
In the employment field, yes. We have job announcements on the website, which means if you sign up to get our e-postcard on the website, you receive those job announcements that come to you via email. If you go also, too, we have what's called, well, we this past fall, we had a few of these, our Veteran Small Business Seminars, seminars that we had located around the state of Minnesota to help service members who are thinking about opening up their own businesses.
And what was the feedback from that series of seminars?
You know, it was really, really great feedback. We had over 200 service members at the different locations attend, and we've had, you know, it's been a short period of time since we had those, but I've already heard about 3 success stories about at least starting a new business.
That's terrific. Megan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Megan Reif, the Employer and Outreach Liaison in Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network. We've linked to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. For more information on bringing service members all the way home, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. Tonight, at the XL Energy Center, thousands of Wild fans will look on as a local soldier takes to the ice for the national anthem. That soldier, saluting the flag alone on the ice, will be just one of many service members to attend tonight's Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Appreciation Night. As little as 40 years ago, inviting a service member to salute the flag in front of thousands of hockey fans would not have been possible. Service members were ashamed to identify themselves as veterans. A couple of brothers that served in Vietnam recently told us that they even considered burning their uniforms when they got home. These veteran Marines weren't applauded at professional sporting events when they came home. Instead, they hid their service and bravery so that they wouldn't be shunned. Today, that's changed. Military members and their families are proud and appreciated throughout Minnesota. Thanks to community, business, and organization leaders like the Wild, those veteran Marines can get military discounted tickets. They'll be there to watch tonight's recognized soldier salutes the flag from center ice. Thank you, Minnesota Wild, for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the yellow ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring service members all the way home. To learn how you can, like the Minnesota Wild, make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. After the break, we visit the Commissioner's Corner and hear from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs next on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
I'm Staff Sergeant Jace Mayberry. Just want to say Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to all my friends and family back home in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Deputy Commissioner Reggie Worlds.
I would like to take a minute to recognize the outstanding efforts by Wreaths Across America, a national nonprofit organization whose goal is to remember, honor, and teach the public about the sacrifices and service of veterans now and throughout history. In December, the community gathered at our State Veterans Cemetery in Little Falls to honor all those laid to rest. During the ceremony, 7 ceremonial wreaths were laid representing each branch of service, the Merchant Mariners, prisoners of war, and those missing in action. This was a ceremony mirrored at cemeteries across the country. Our cemetery has participated in this project for the past 4 years. It's a simple and meaningful way to honor those who have served. Partners like these are deserving of a salute. As we start a new year, I would like to thank the various veteran service organizations, legislators, and many others for all the continued support in 2010. Last year, the department enjoyed a number of successes, and was able to assist many veterans and their families through our various programs and initiatives. With the start of the legislative session, we are looking forward to building new relationships with the incoming senators and representatives and their staff members. This will be a busy session as we work to educate the new leaders on the vision of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. As a cabinet-level state agency, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is dedicated to serving Minnesota veterans and their families. Within the MDVA, our Veterans Homes Division provides a continuum of long-term care for its residents. Our Veterans Homes are located in Minneapolis, Hastings, Silver Bay, Laverne, and Fergus Falls. These facilities manage a combination of skilled nursing care beds, domiciliary care, rehabilitation, recreational work therapy, and Alzheimer's programs. In addition to overseeing the five state veterans homes, MDVA helps eligible veterans and families secure state and federal benefits and provides programs and services relating to higher education, benefits, burial, claims, outreach, and veterans' preference. Overall, the department was successful in accomplishing important and critical tasks in 2010. I am confident that 2011 will be just as successful. There is still a great deal of work to accomplish in serving Minnesota veterans, but the department is up to the challenge. I would like to again express our appreciation for your continued support. I look forward to working with all of you in the new year.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Worlds. You can find out more about Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs at minnesotaveteran.org or 1-888-LINK-VET. Each week, we explore the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs commitment to serving Minnesota veterans, their dependents, and survivors by securing benefits provided by federal and state laws. This week, Gil Acevedo joins us. He is a retired Command Master Chief in the United States Navy, and he is the Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Gil, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me here today.
So I understand that you are primarily charged with overseeing the veterans' homes in Minnesota.
That's correct. The five veterans' homes throughout the state, as mentioned by Deputy Commissioner Worlds, we have veterans' homes in Laverne, Minneapolis, Hastings, Fergus Falls, and Silver Bay.
And Gil, how many veterans are staying in those homes now?
It varies. Each home is committed to providing care to all of our veterans and their family members that are eligible. And the size of the home is different depending on the location of the home. And overall, we have about 800 veterans that we serve currently. But as an example, the Minneapolis home, our largest home, has 341 veterans that we can care for there at one time. And our smaller homes in Laverne, Fergus Falls, and Silver Bay, we can take care of 85 veterans there and or their family members at each home. And then the Hastings home, we can take care of about 200.
I would guess that the homes are full and you probably have a waiting list?
We do have a waiting list at each of our homes, with the exception of Hastings. Hastings Veterans Home is a little different. That's a domiciliary. It's a board and care facility. It's not a nursing home, per se. Our other homes do have a waiting list, and in some cases, pretty extensive.
A lot of veterans to take care of in Minnesota, aren't there?
There sure is.
Gil, do you have some new initiatives or goals for the veterans' homes for 2011?
We do. We're very proud of the care that we provide our veterans, but we can always do it better. And some of the things that we're looking into the future is Medicare certification. Our five homes are not Medicare certified. That brings in federal dollars to help provide the care and pay for the care at our veterans' homes here in the state. That's a pretty extensive process. We're at the very infant, very beginning stages of that process. So we're hopeful that at some point towards the spring, we'll complete our certification at least at the Minneapolis home and then start working on certification at our other homes. We have an adult daycare project that we're working on right now, which is continuing to expand our services at our veterans' home, particularly at Minneapolis. We're hopeful that that care, that services will be available sometime in the spring. We're looking at centralizing our pharmacy, providing pharmacy pharmaceutical care to all of our veterans' homes from one location, continue within a process improvement initiative that we're working on at all of our homes, looking at diabetes studies at our homes, basically pain management, fall prevention, a number of other things along process improvement. And then we're looking at conducting a study at the Hastings Veterans Home to determine the future of the Hastings Veterans Home. How do we want to provide care at the Hastings Veterans Home? I mentioned that it was a board and care, but we wanted to provide services there, maybe a little different, caring for those that are recently returning Iraqi veterans. We have a lot of homeless veterans. We want to provide care across the board to all of our residents.
We're speaking with Gil Acevedo, the Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, here on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Gil, what type of opportunities from within the communities are you hoping to achieve for the residents?
The Hastings home in particular and the Minneapolis home, actually all of our homes are located in a community. And here in 2011, I'm looking at really expanding the community type relationship with the Hastings Veterans Homes in particular, things such as educational and vocational rehabilitation services, work therapy, volunteerism, and partnership in the local community.
Can you explain to me what you mean by neighborhood style of care for the residents?
Sure. The long-term care industry over the past few years has really changed how they want to provide care to residents in nursing homes. Get away from a institutionalized type care. And when we are talking about person-centered care or a neighborhood type of a community, is turning a veterans home or a nursing home more into a home-like environment so that it looks like their home. And it's more than just a physical plan of changing colors and things of that nature. It's really determining when a resident wants to get up for breakfast. Before, in the old days, we would determine everybody would get up at a certain time and then we would line them up and everybody would eat at the same time. But that's not normal. That's not a way that we live our lives. We want to make sure that everybody's living their lives as if they were living in their home.
Are there any other veterans homes or nursing homes in the private sector that are implementing these type of initiatives?
Throughout the United States, veterans homes and nursing homes across the board are going through a person-centered care type approach. And it's really working just absolutely fantastic. The ability for family members and residents to be part of their care planning, to be able to determine what they like and how they want to do it, and be involved in the decision-making of their care.
I understand you've got a few construction projects coming up for 2011. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. We have construction projects at every single one of our veterans' homes right now. We have, as I mentioned, the adult day is looking to open up in spring of 2011. We have a 100-bed nursing home and a town center at the Minneapolis campus. We're looking at that sometime around summer of 2012. And we have a domiciliary renovation of Building 16 at Minneapolis sometime around February 2012 as well. The Fergus Falls additional 21-bed Alzheimer's unit, we should have that completed sometime this coming spring.
You've got a lot going on, and we've got a lot of veterans in Minnesota. You've got a big job to take good care of our veterans, don't you?
Well, we take a lot of pride in what we do, and we love our job, and our veterans deserve the very best along with their families. So we take a lot of pride in what we do.
Gil Acevedo, thanks for joining us on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Tom, thank you very much.
That was Gil Acevedo, the Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. To find out more about programs provided by the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, go to minnesotaveteran.org or call 1-888-LINK-VET. When we return, we take a look at Minnesota in the Spanish-American War. That's next here on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Lieutenant Tiffany Vandenbrucke saying happy holidays from Camp Eggers, Afghanistan. Just wanted to say hello to the Biddle family back in Lionel Lakes, Minnesota. And I love you and I miss you guys and hope to see you soon.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. This week, Leland Smith joins us. He's a veteran of the United States Marine Corps and served in Korea. He's also a historian for the Minnesota Military Museum. Mr. Smith, welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
I'm glad to be here.
Our topic today is the Spanish-American War. Can you tell me what was the origin of that war?
Well, in 1895, a revolution broke out in Cuba. The American newspapers took the side of the revolutionaries, were very busy publishing all the atrocities that they wanted to accuse the Spanish of. The United States sent the battleship Maine down to Havana in 1898. And while it was sitting in the harbor overseeing the interests of American plantation owners and businesses in there, an explosion happened aboard the ship. The newspapers in America immediately blamed the Spanish for it, and we declared war on them. The president called for volunteers from all the states. Minnesota volunteered 3 regiments of infantry and later a 4th regiment. They were concentrated at the fairgrounds for their training and filling up with the regimental numbers. They were examined by the regular army inspectors, and one regiment was determined to be fit for foreign service without further training, and that was the 1st Minnesota Infantry, renumbered the 13th Veterans Infantry Veterans, and they were assigned to go to the Philippines, where there was also an uprising going on against the Spanish. So we took the side of the revolutionaries in the Philippines. The Navy fought a battle in the Philippines and another one near Cuba and, in effect, decimated the Spanish fleet. Then, when the Spanish signed a surrender with the United States, the natives who had been fighting against the Spanish decided they didn't like the Americans any better than they did the Spanish. And so, although Cuba settled down fairly soon, we became an army of occupation. In the Philippines, the insurrection grew to the point where we had to add additional troops. And the Minnesota troops stayed there for over a year.
Now, were these National Guard troops, Mr. Smith?
These were National Guard troops. When the National Guard was called up for as volunteers, it was determined they would not be sent as units but as volunteers, and those who volunteered would be furloughed and would be responsible to re-enter their units when they came back from foreign service. The commanding officer of the 13th Minnesota was promoted to brigadier general and made provost marshal for Luzon under Arthur MacArthur, who was the father of Douglas MacArthur of World War II fame. We had very few casualties in these operations caused by enemy action, but we had hundreds of casualties to disease because sanitation was not understood as it is now. Even when they were camping at the fairgrounds, typhoid fever broke out and ran through the regiments. We had a great loss of life due to that.
Now, was there more than one regiment involved? How many were deployed and how many were called up and how many were deployed?
4 were called up. And only one was deployed overseas. The others were sent down and occupied some of the old Civil War campsites in Georgia and later in Pennsylvania. And they lived under very primitive conditions, but none of them got to Cuba. The only Minnesota troops that actually saw action were the 13th Regiment, which went to the Philippines.
And how many troops were involved in that regiment?
A little over 1,000.
So 1,000 went. How many came home?
About 850.
And most of that, most of them that didn't come home were due to disease, is that what you said?
That's right.
And how long were they deployed?
They were deployed approximately a year.
And you said the units that were not deployed we sent down to Georgia?
They resided in camps waiting to be transported to Cuba, but the war ended in less than 3 months, and it was not necessary to send them down there. We retained a little occupation force in Cuba. The revolutionaries settled down to start building a country without Spanish occupation. American troops remained in Cuba for about 5 years, and when we finally pulled our people out, we kept Guantanamo Bay as a coaling station for our fleet. In those days, Navy ships were fueled with coal and ran on steam engines. It was later determined, years later, when they had raised the main and examined the area of the explosion, that it had not been sabotage to the ship, but had been a coal dust explosion in the coal bunkers that sank the main.
So the Remember the Main, that call sign was just a false assumption.
Well, that was coined by William Randolph Hearst in his newspaper chain, and he kept an inflammatory rhetoric going in his paper for months to keep us interested in going to war with Spain and to sell a lot of newspapers.
Now, Mr. Smith, from beginning to end, how short or long was the Spanish-American War?
10 weeks.
10 weeks. My goodness. And it's fascinating to hear that the origins of the Guantanamo Bay base, which we've all heard about recent years, was during the Spanish-American War.
Right.
I had no idea that was the case.
Well, we were glad to get a coaling station in Cuba. When the fleet was burning coal, we had little stations all around the world. When the fleet went from place to place, they had to make arrangements ahead of time from foreign countries to get coal. It was an interesting sideline in law that a naval unit landing military forces on a foreign shore was not necessarily a declaration of war. If they didn't do any serious damage and just watered or coaled or stole a few cattle for rations, it was a diplomatic matter. And that was settled by diplomats sitting in high offices somewhere. Money was exchanged, and sometimes the people who owned the cows were actually paid for them.
Sounds pretty civilized. And they must have changed the entire mission of that base at Guantanamo after they started building ships that weren't built on coal.
Yes, it was maintained as an outpost for many years, and particularly during World War II, it became a landing place for observation planes searching for submarines in that part of the world.
And clearly was a useful asset, so we kept it.
Oh, definitely.
Mr. Smith, thanks for joining us today and telling us about the Spanish-American War.
It's my pleasure.
We've linked to more information on Facebook and at the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.com. We took up a little more time than we anticipated with this Marine Corps historian. But if you have, and so we won't have time for mail call today, if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com and let us know what's on your mind. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, State Command Sergeant Major Scott Mills from the Minnesota National Guard, Megan Reif from Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, Deputy Commissioner Gil Acevedo from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Marine and historian Leland Smith from the Minnesota Military Museum, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Thank you for joining us today for the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. If you have questions for our mailbag or if you want to check out the podcast of today's show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Please join us next Sunday morning at 7 as we talk about how the Minnesota National Guard serves our state during emergencies, Minnesota's Support Our Troops license plates, and we go back to Minnesota during World War I. That's next Sunday morning at 7, right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.